You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 35. We've got a treat in store tonight. We've got myself on, obviously that's a treat. Because there was no podcast last week, and we've got John. Other John, how you doing?
I am good. I knew that was coming. You were going to introduce us as a treat. Whether the listeners agree, I don't know, but I think we've got the guests as the treat this week.
Aye, I mean, to be honest, that's what I was leading to. It was a treat. It's always a treat when we've got a guest on. But before that, when I was a guest, we've got Josh on as well. How you doing?
How we doing, John? And John?
Very good. Very good. So yes, we have a returning guest on, author. You're an official author definitely now in terms of two books. Had you on before when you brought out We Made Them Angry in 2022. So we have Tom Brogan on with his next book, which is Scotland 101, An Introduction to the National Team. How are you doing, Tom?
Great stuff. Aye. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. Good to see you.
Aye, it's a pleasure. We'll get your wee podcast even a plug. Shoot the Breeze podcast. How often do you record?
Well, we're in hibernation, I think, for now. We've not done one for a while. Andy Smith, that I do them with, Scots Footy Cards on Twitter. It's a lot of work for Andy because we give a guest an old shoot magazine or a match magazine or whatever, and he's got to scan it all in. And Andy likes to take a lot of time on it, you know, so I think he'd other priorities kind of thing. So we've not done one for a while, but we're hoping to come back and do a live one. Like we were saying off air there, I'm a Clydebank supporter and so is Andy. So we're looking at doing a couple of live podcasts for the benefit of the club to have a sort of pie and a pint night kind of thing. And we're going to try and get some ex-Clydebank players on and do a couple of live ones, and then that'll maybe give wet Andy's appetite to start doing them over Zoom again.
Good stuff. Tonight we're going to chat about some memories from the book, and it's a perfect year for it because hopefully we are going to create some special ones later on in the Euros. We'll also later on, maybe towards the end of the podcast, preview the Nations League draw, which takes place on Thursday. And obviously another treat there as well in Group A, and England are in Group B, so that's always good to get one over them. But yeah, let's start with a book about what made you think, right, I'm going to write this about Scotland.
Well, I kind of followed on for the last book. So the last book focused on the 1982 World Cup campaign. So I wanted to just sort of get right into something else. And, you know, I'd done a lot of research, obviously, in Scotland and looked at autobiographies and things. And I wondered if doing sort of smaller wee snapshots or different stories throughout the history of Scottish football. And it just sort of led me to do that. I come up with a sort of 101 idea. And then, you know, that was me committed to doing 101 chapters on Scotland. And I wanted to do the rough with the smooth, you know. I wanted to do the kind of games that people maybe don't talk about so much as well, you know, to look at what went wrong and what we learned from them, you know. So I wanted to do some of the bad games as well as all the good games, you know. And I wanted to try and focus on some individual players and kind of things like that as well. So I had a lot of fun with it because I just get sort of free rein to sort of pick what I wanted to do, you know. The publishers weren't trying to steer me in any particular direction, you know. So, you know, I just sort of played around with what I could, what was most enjoyable for me. And it was good to write like that as well, because you didn't get bored, because you just jumped about from one thing to the next thing, you know. If you get fed up researching or writing one thing, you could just immediately jump over onto something else, onto another era, you know. So it was a kind of It was full on, but it was enjoyable to write. And a lot of these stories get cut down. You know, my original drafts, a lot of these were a lot longer than it was in the books. Some of them are quite short, so there was a lot kind of trimmed, a lot of sort of fun wee facts and all that were kind of trimmed here and there to obviously to fit the length of the book had to be.
I definitely like the format because I've read other books that have got similar kind of format where they're quite short in terms of chapter, but I find them very bitty. Whereas I feel yours, and not to blow smoke up you, even though it's like short chapters, you get enough information that makes it interesting and makes it that you feel like you've taken enough from it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want them to be like kind of like condensed Wikipedia pages or anything like that. I wanted to try and get a couple of sort of good wee nuggets of information in for each of them. I didn't want them just dull to be sort of wee pen picks. You know what I mean? Just sort of standard detail. I wanted to try and get cram in the odd wee anecdote or the odd wee fact here and there, especially when you were doing wee profiles of players. And with the players, I tried to keep it to their Scotland careers. It's easy to go into the things that they've done at club level and all that as well, because some of these things are notable. But I tried to keep it kind of tight to their Scotland careers. Their notable Scotland games.
Yeah.
I'm 54 chapters in, Tom, and I must concur with what John says. I think it's been a smashing read so far, and I like the fact that it's been done in small sections. I know that would have been difficult for you to narrow the words down, but what was the thought process behind some of your, should I say, random picks? Like, for example, I mean, don't want to give too much away because obviously we want people to buy the book for you. Chapters like, for example, Scotland under 23s, not Netherlands under 23s, which not many people would have known much about. What was your thought process behind picking those ones?
Again, I think that was just something I came across when I was doing the last book, and it was I think that was the first penalty shootout Scotland were involved in, and also because you had guys like Willie Miller and Joe Jordan that playing in those games as well, so I thought it was just nice to kind of focus on a lot of sort of bigger, well-known Scottish players in these smaller games, and also it was the wee taste of success there as well, when they won the Cannes tournament in 76, and also the 82 Euros as well. I just wanted to try and to go through the years and just pick out wee things that maybe aren't as well known. It keeps me interested as well. It's you don't want to kind of just keep doing things that you're like, well, I've read an article about that, you know what I mean? Or like there's an article in the Scotsman about that kind of thing. You want to try and find things that you've heard a wee bit about, but you'd like to find out a bit more detail kind of thing. What went on, and like I say, it's interesting to focus on some of the names, when before they kind of made their name in the Scotland team.
Was there particular chapters that you enjoyed researching more? Like, was there?
Yeah, I mean, probably once you get into the 70s and 80s, the chapter Scotland and Wales at Anfield was good. That could have been a lot longer. But that was interesting, just looking into how that game came about. And obviously 77 pitch invasion as well at Wembley was great. That could have been a lot longer. I actually enjoyed, obviously, a sad night, but I actually enjoyed writing the death of Jock Stein. I mean, that because that was interesting, because I went through lots of autobiographies and first person accounts, and because every 5 years or whatever, 10 years, there's another newspaper article about it. So I found that really interesting. Doing that. So and also the 9-3 defeat in 61 was really interesting as well. Looking to try and find different opinions as well, and finding stuff from English players. And it's interesting that English players weren't sort of arrogant about it kind of thing. You know what I mean? That they were. They were of the opinion that it wasn't a bad Scotland team. You know what I mean? It was just sort of Johnny Haynes and Jimmy Greaves. They're really on fire that day. So things like that were interesting. Things that you've heard about a lot, and then just sort of digging into and trying to find different takes on it, different opinions on it. So I found all that really enjoyable as well.
Obviously, the book's dedicated to your mum and dad. I take it, was it your dad kind of took you to the Scotland games when you were younger?
My first Scotland game was with my dad. It was Kenny Dalglish's 100th cap, actually.
Cool.
My dad took me to against Romania. Because Dalglish was my hero growing up, you know, and I wanted to see him play in the flesh, you know, before he retired. So my dad took me to that one. But yeah, like I say, my dad told me a lot of these stories, you know what I mean, about the 9-3 game, you know. My dad told me about a lot of these players, you know, obviously Jimmy Johnston and Jock Stein and different nights watching Scotland, you know. So that was what I sort of grew up on, you know, was all my dad's stories. Like I say, I'm a Clyde Banks supporter, and my dad was a Celtic fan, you know, so I grew up on stories of the Lisbon Lions and things like that, you know. But yeah, but I was a Celtic and a Scotland fan. Talked a lot about the Scotland team as well, and obviously that's my I say, and my mum passed away actually just before my first book came out, so my mum was always very supportive. Even although, you know what I mean, I was making not penny one from writing, but my man never ever told me, you know, chuck this, don't waste your time doing this. She was always very supportive of me writing, you know, whether I was getting anywhere or not. You know, she knew it was what I wanted to do, kind of thing, and she was always very supportive of us.
It's very assumptive to say it was your dad that took you to your first game, because I should say, was your mum into football as well or
I
not?
loved it. She was. I. My mum didn't really go. My dad used to take her to Celtic games, but my mum would watch games on the TV. You know, I know. I remember watching a few Celtic Scotland games with my mum, you know, on the telly. But yeah, my mum took an interest. But it was that kind of thing. She took an interest because I took an interest. You know, she knew I supported, you know, Scotland or whoever it was I was supporting. She wanted to win as well, you know.
Tom, I'm interested in I'm interested in games pre-modern era, so pre-60s, and I suppose, I mean, for me, these can I think we kind of consign the early years, let's say the first 50, 60 years of football to the kind of library of history. You know, I mean, games where you hear about Scotland beat England 14 11 or something like that, you know. What was that like researching some of the kind of earlier games? Was it interesting? Was it challenging? Because I mean, a lot of the time it can feel a wee bit, because you don't have footage of it, you know, there's no still images of these kind of earlier players scoring goals. I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, no, that's totally right, Josh. You know, when you're reading about guys like Alan Morton, you know, and you're reading people saying greatest players that they've ever seen, you know, you've sort of got to take what people are saying. You know, you've got to take them at their word for that, because you can't see the footage of them, and you do lose the sense of their sort of place in the history of the game. And you know, newspaper reports maybe certainly weren't as detailed as these days. They're not as tactical, kind of thing, you know. So as well as the newspaper reports, you're trying to find people's accounts. Maybe the Daily Record speaks to somebody in 1980 about a game from 30 years ago, kind of thing, you know. And you're trying to build up this consensus of what these players were like, you know what I mean? And was it really hyperbole at the time, or you know, were these guys actually really as gifted as they were made out to be? But yeah, it can be difficult just to find just to try and paint the picture that it's much easier to paint nowadays, you know. And actually, it's not just that olden times kind of thing. As it goes on, the later games are right about there's more statistical stuff, you know, because you know, Sky Sports are giving you percentages and shots on goal, and The Athletic are giving you breakdowns and all this. You know, Daily Record never had any of that kind of stuff in the 80s, you know. So again, going back further to the 50s and 60s, but you had my reporters who were really, really invested in the game and really invested in the players as well, you know. So it's difficult to really sort of paint a picture and really put these guys up there with the modern day players. Like you say, a lot of these guys in another 20, 30 years will get forgotten to history. They'll not get their place as you know, sort of as great as some of the guys that there's plenty of footage of nowadays.
Because I think there's a tendency, not just in Scottish football, but in football generally, to rewrite history. And we're constantly thinking, God, this player's the best footballer that's ever lived, you know. Even now, you know, I think about Lionel Messi, and I think, you know, in 30 years, is there going to be a player that we're saying is better than Lionel Messi, you know, that sort of thing. And I think it must be hard for you as a writer to try and put what was relevant at the time into a kind of 21st century, 2024 context.
Yeah, everybody. Sorry, Josh. Everybody wants to be feeling that they're watching the best. Everybody wants to feel that they're experiencing something, and they're not sitting going and go, "This must football must have been better 20 years ago before I started watching it." Everybody wants to feel that this is the time. These are the guy. These are the great players. You know what I mean? This is the experience. You know.
Just on that. It can be anywhere in the book, but what was the most challenging chapter to write? Not just in terms of research, but what was the most difficult one for you?
Probably the earlier stuff was hard because it's all, a lot of it's kind of already been done. It's trying to dig up new stuff and kind of make it interesting, you know. The later years were much there was much more material around, so it's probably the earlier stuff and about the earlier players. It's just trying to find stuff that's not really been that, you know, you're not lifting just a whole article kind of thing. You're trying to pick wee details for here and there. That they're probably the more challenging ones.
Did you find yourself going any rambles around Cathcart Cemetery at all?
No, I didn't.
I think what I've liked about some of your stories as well is that you've included the thoughts of the opposition. So I've seen your bibliography that you spoke that you read books from like say, Gordon Banks and the views of Jack Charlton and Bobby Charlton, etc. And you know, but even Bobby Moore, you know, just to try and give it that bit of perspective and balance. I thought that was really good. Was that a good day or two at the Mitchell looking at all that
Yeah,
stuff,
no,
or did you have?
that was good. That was something I wanted to do, and it's interesting looking back at books like that, like you see with Gordon Banks. I mean, you know, Gordon Banks has got bits about how like Jim Baxter made a complete fool of him kind of thing. I don't think you'd really see that in a modern book now. You know what I mean? The English, you know, English goalkeeper saying, "Oh, you know, he spoiled my debut because you know he scored 2 goals past me," kind of thing. You know, so you found that a lot of the English players. Talk about how good the Scotland players were, you know what I mean, and how outclassed they were in different games. And I discovered Stanley Matthews' autobiography has basically got a chapter about Hampden Park. He's got a chapter about how awe-inspiring it was to play at Hampden Park and the roar of the Scottish crowd. I just honestly can't imagine like Harry Kane or somebody writing a book now saying, you know, that 2-2 draw, like, you know, the crowd nearly beat us and how incredible the Scots crowd were kind of thing, you know. So it was just really interesting. He dedicated basically a chapter in his autobiography to talk about Scotland and the people of Scotland and what an amazing experience it was to play against Scotland, you know. So I thought, oh, that was great. And like I say, it's probably harder now to find that kind of thing, that kind of perspective now, you know. But where players were maybe they were all right by making themselves not look great. I think if you find that as well, if you look like we were talking about the podcast, our podcast, we look at shoot and match and all that. You sometimes see articles for players there, sort of talking about how they didn't play very well in a game, or they weren't fit, kind of thing, or you know they didn't really deliver on that. And there's that kind of insight and sort of self-reflection that's no you don't really see in the modern sort of media these days. These days, players don't really have that kind of you know self-critical analysis.
See, when you were writing your book and you were researching these old players from before your own era, was there a particular player that stood out? You're like, I wish I'd seen them, that maybe you weren't aware of before you researched the book.
I'm trying to think. Bobby Collins, probably. I think Bobby Collins is one that I would have liked to have seen. But the two guys that really stand out, not unsurprisingly, are Dennis Law and Jim Baxter. I think as you go through the newspapers and autobiographies and all that, it's very consistent that everybody says just you know what a difference they made on the pitch. And a Scotland jersey and just and very different styles of players, you know. People always say what great how great it was to play alongside them or play against them kind of thing. And again, different styles, like Dennis Law was obviously sort of driven and focused, and he was quite a hard tackler and aggressive. But Baxter liked to swan about and rip the pitch. There's a couple of wee instances you read that Baxter was more concerned about nutmegging opponents than he was about scoring goals. And everybody, the people were sometimes frustrated with him, but they were always like, he was just class, So those are the three players for me that I would love to have actually seen in the flesh,
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Josh was talking about Lionel Messi being the best player of the modern era. I think Jim Baxter probably thought himself as the best player in his era. But what I thought was interesting was how you highlighted his performance of 63, because a lot of people think Jim Baxter, 67, the keepy uppy, but he actually scored twice a few years earlier. I remember a video that my granddad had came out in the early 90s about Scotland's greatest wins over England. Josh is like, what's VHS? Yeah, Baxter was outstanding both the games. And in that 63 game, Scotland played with 10 players for 85 minutes because Caldwell broke his leg in the days of no sub, and Baxter basically won that on his own.
Yeah, I know that's remarkable. Yeah, to think about that, but yeah, and again, like the English players like that say that, he was just different class that day,
See straight away as well from reading the book. It's astonishing. Like, it's something I knew, because we've done the Glasgow tour. What are they called? The Hamden Collection. And obviously they talk about how Scotland invented the passing game and England did the dribbling. But to think that in that first game between the two sides, Scotland played a 2-2-6, England played a 1-2-7, and the game finished 0-0. How could that possibly have happened?
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? This is the most important football match of all time, kind of thing, and there wasn't a goal in it.
I reckon they should have an exhibition match, right? Scotland should play England again, and they
Same
should do the
formation.
same formations and see what happens.
Who would be the two at the back for Scotland, though?
Tierney and Packie.
Don't know.
I would go
I,
to
who
the
who
back.
who who would be the seven up front? That's more the point.
I mean, we'd be struggling for that. We'd have to get a few wingers in. Six up front. Aye. Have to borrow some players.
We'll send Grant Hanley up front for the last couple of minutes.
Yeah. See, just going back to first game, kind of spoke to Tom about the first game. John, what was your first game? We probably have discussed this before, but
The first
remember
Scotland
the first
game I
game?
went to was Scotland San Marino in Euro 92 qualifying. And no, I was 10 years old at that point, and obviously took us over the line for Euro 92. That was mine, yeah.
Josh, mind yours?
No, we've talked about this on the pod before. I don't actually remember what my first game was.
Remember.
When I was very young, so I would have been. I know it was when I was about maybe about 8 or 9. So when would that have been? About 2000, 2001. So I mean, who was in our group at that period of time? Let's see it. Oh well, here we are, Blaisdell. On you go.
Rain Man, Marcus,
So
don't
that
worry.
would have been World Cup 2002 qualifying. So that would have been Belgium, Croatia, San Marino, and Latvia. And I think there's someone else in there that I've forgotten about. No, that's it.
It will have been one of them, but I mean, I didn't seriously start going to Scotland games until I was about 16, 17. Remember one of my first campaigns was that one where the Czech Republic came. Who was that? Who was in that group, John? Czech Republic.
So that was Czech Republic, Spain,
Yeah, Spain.
Lithuania, and
Yeah.
Liechtenstein.
Yeah, aye. McManus for the 2-1. Yeah, aye. So that was probably my first. Well, I mean, if we're talking memory, we'll go probably Liechtenstein or Spain, whatever one was first in that campaign.
Who would have taken you to your first game then?
My dad.
Your dad would have taken you to your first game. See, just Tom with yourself and dedicating the book, obviously, to your mum and dad. Who were your dad's favourite players? Obviously, he mentioned that he supported Celtic, but in terms of from a Scotland point of view, was there certain players that he spoke to you about growing up, or you remember watching with him?
Oh, well, I mean, again, it was Jimmy Johnson and Billy McNeil, really. But again, it was guys like Joe Jordan, Kenny Dalglish. It was I was it was those kind of guys, you know. I'm trying to think if there was anything specific that he spoke about with regards to Scotland players. But it was the usual suspects, you know. I mean, like I say, you know, Jimmy Johnson and Billy McNeil. But Joe Jordan, Kenny Dalglish. Aye, those kind of guys.
You want to give us a wee snippet from one of the chapters of that, or do you want to give us a wee insight?
I meant to put the copy in front of me, but I don't have one. I don't have one here.
Don't worry. I'm not reading a snippet from it. I've got the book behind me. I could, but I think it'd be better from yourself. But no, that's all right.
I've got it next to me, and by the way, thank you for including Moonbrook as part of your research. That's actually amazing to see.
Oh yeah, no, not at all, not at all, John.
I was struggling to see that. I mean, it was a list of podcasts. I couldn't see I was on it. That was it. That must have copyright. It must have been something like copyright or something like that. Sorry. But even when you go back and look at some of the early players, can you imagine having guys that are scoring like a goal a game for Scotland? Sometimes players that are scoring more than a goal a game. You look back in history, and I know there wasn't as many games played, but still, at any level, to be doing that, crazy. Imagine having that now.
Yeah.
They'll ever see it. If we'll ever have someone in their squad that was scoring a goal a game or even close to it.
No,
Well,
I
they've got.
know. We're just happy that Scotland can score a goal again, far less a particular player.
Well, we've got. I mean, we've got a striker right now playing in the Scottish Premiership who, might guarantee you a goal a game.
Talk about Shankland.
Absolutely. Absolutely, for me, I think he's the type of player that you're just, you're absolutely guaranteed a goal a game. And I mean, with this being probably the best Scotland team of my lifetime, I do think that, there are options there up top, and I think Shankland is one of them. But I mean, like Tom says, I mean, it's the thing is about the team right now, and I know we're going to go on to talk more, specifically about the team right now, but it's not that you're guaranteed a goal every game. It's that you're almost guaranteed a competitive game no matter who we're playing,
Yeah.
and you're almost guaranteed that no matter who we are playing, we might beat them. Does that make sense? So I just, yeah, it's just such a positive
Me
thing to be a Scotland fan.
in the 13 years of doing the podcast, we used to dread coming on after a Scotland game because it would generally be kind of doom and gloom, whereas now there is that proper buzz, and even before it, like we're going into games like this ties in nicely with your book, because your book finishes with the Scotland Spain game. Prior to that game, we were on the podcast and we were thinking, we can beat Spain. No, everyone thought it, but we did think, yeah, no, we've got a chance here, we could win. That just would not happen 10 years ago. Even though we were quite often, we'd get a good result against a bigger team, you wouldn't expect it. Whereas now we actually go into games expecting, we can beat them. That's
Yeah.
just, it's crazy to think. Because even when you're yearning, you're optimistic. I don't think ever you're thinking, no, we're going to beat these big nations. If I think about when we used to be in qualifying for tournaments regularly, I always probably thought, we're probably going to lose, unfortunately.
Yeah. I and I mean, I think that the thing used to be during the kind of wilderness years of the 2000s and 2010s, I think the thing used to be that people would say, we're not great, but on our day at Hampden, on our day we can really beat anyone. But the thing is, I think on our day is right for right now anyway. I think on our day is a thing of the past, because on our the idea of it, if you're on your day, it kind of suggests that it's something. It's a footballing performance that doesn't really happen that often. Whereas right now we're rocking up to Hampden every week. No, every week, every international break. I wish it was every week. Every international break, and just bodying teams every single time we go out. So, it's just a happy time to be alive.
I think if it was every week, you'd be asking for George Best lover. So that's how bad it would be for you. But I mean, in terms of like, is this era, how highly does this era rate just now, do you think, compared to maybe like the 90s when we're qualifying regular tournaments and also the 70s? I'll ask yourself, Tom, first. Like, where do you think it ranks?
Yeah, well, it's it's getting up there, but I remember in those days we just assumed we were going to qualify for groups. I mean, like that when we draw with Wales in 85 to go to the playoff, and I remember that the mood of that was just like that was just we basically qualified. It was just two games against Australia, so that there was that kind of like oh, this is just Australia, but. And then years later, we'd have been terrified having to play Australia in two games, So we did just sort of breeze through qualifying a lot of the times then. Whereas now we're only just getting to grips. We are actually managing to get through qualifying. But I think as Josh says, that you've got the optimism there that we are going to go and we are going to go and qualify regularly and hopefully actually get through. I mean, I'm probably most confident this time that we're actually going to get through into the knockout rounds of a finals. I don't know if I ever felt that in previous years that we thought we could get through into the knockout rounds, but I think we can now. And you can see that the Scotland team is just improving. And maybe in years gone by, you were relying on maybe two or three big players who weren't going to carry on kind of thing. But I think now the Scotland team is just improving, and you're seeing guys that are playing at the top level who aren't even maybe getting a crack at the Scotland team yet. So you can see when more players are going to come in. And when it's not just a kind of case of like, well, let's do it this time because this is the last time we'll have this group of players. I think there's constantly going to be players, and the main guys are getting better as well. Like John McGinn is every week is looking like an absolute class player who you think is probably going to get a move to an elite team soon as well. So even the good players are getting better, and there's players coming through. So I really do think that hopefully this could end up being the sort of greatest Scotland team of all our lifetimes.
I imagine what you're going to tell us, because you need to sell some books from the 90s. So, John, what was it compared just now?
It's always difficult to compare eras because obviously different things happened and there's also been different rule changes and things like that. Obviously, tournaments have increased the number of nations participating have increased. I mean, for example, Euro 92, there was what 33 nations competed for seven of the eight places, the other one being the host. Whereas now it's almost half of the UEFA nations are qualifying for this one. I think the 90s, there was such an expectation in Scotland that, I mean, we qualified for four out of five. The only one we missed was USA in 94. And obviously, I'll cover Euro 96 another day, but that was actually a bigger achievement than people thought. But whereas, obviously, we've had that long tenure without being at a major tournament that, just getting to, having that buzz of being at back-to-back Euros. It's just amazing. I mean, because a lot of the younger generation, like Josh, for example, he wouldn't have really recalled what happened in the 90s, and now he's going through this era of seeing Scotland qualify for back-to-back years, and hopefully there's another World Cup on top of that. The Nations League's exciting, but yeah, in terms of standards of players, I mean, you could have these debates about who was better in what era and now, but I just think that we've just got to appreciate what we've got just now, especially the fullbacks that we've got just now. I mean, Hickey and Patterson one side, Tierney and Robertson the other, and Tierney has to move into centre back so that Robertson can stay left back. It's a great problem to have.
Josh, obviously, John is saying you're too young to remember the 90s and that era that John and me can remember growing up in. But this era just now, how high I
Yeah,
like it.
I mean, I can't. I mean, the thing is, my perspective compared to the guys is completely different. I mean, my era of following Scotland was through my late teens and 20s when it was Craig Levein and George Burley and Gordon Strachan, and it was just failure after failure. So I mean, I can't tell you what it was like to qualify for World Cup after World Cup, but I can tell you what it was like to watch Charlie Adams step off Gareth Bale and let him ping one in for about 40 yards. And I can tell you, I can give you an exclusive, actually, probably that was crap. So it's been, I mean, when we've went through so many kind of, so many years of just torture. I mean, I've had some great trips, great trips, great times, and all of that, and some great results in that time. But I think the difference now is that the great trips and the great results are coming if have a fruition. They come to something. I think about, I think, I mean, what, 10 years ago when we beat Croatia 2-0 at Hampden. Was it 1-0, John? 2-0, wasn't it?
Two not Hampden, one all
Yeah,
away.
2-0. Yeah, 1-0 away and 2-0. Great results, great trips, right? But it meant nothing. It meant absolutely nothing. So, I mean, now you're looking at a team who are better than any team in my lifetime, certainly in my memory. And you have character. You've character throughout the team. And do you know something? You've got likability throughout the team as well now. And I think you kind of, unlikable teams win trophies, but there's something to be said about the fact that, even 10, 15 years ago, there's a lot of players who, I think about in the late 2000s where, you had Ferguson, Boyd, McGregor, the kind of Boozegate stuff and all that. I mean, now you wouldn't even, a scandal at the Scotland national team is unthinkable now, just because we've got a team of absolute professionals that, love playing for the country. I can't wait for the summer, as John and John, absolutely cannot wait to go to Germany and sample the local brews.
We can give some an exclusive here that we are going to try and record some stuff when we're over in Germany. How good it will be, we don't know, because we might be a few sheets to the wind, but we shall try our best to get some kind of content.
I think you'll be able to tell how many days into the trip we are by how slurred my speech is.
Well, Josh, that's
You'll have lost your voice by the time the Germany game comes.
mate,
Never mind after the game.
that will be gone by day two, I can guarantee you.
How many tops will be lost?
On day 1, 5.
No, I'm. If I make this trip without losing a single top, it's the miracle of Euro 2024, by the way, because I think the main thing I need to focus on is just keep my top on this time. But it's gonna be El Scorcho in Germany at that time of the year. So, you need to get a bit of tan going.
If it's anything like the 2006 World Cup, Derek Ray was telling us in an interview that we'll have coming out for his famous Saturday Night Magazine next month. 2006 World Cup, it was scorching. And if it's anything like that, I think you'll best be leaving your tops in your hotel room to prepare for us, Josh, because I know you love to show off your six pack.
Tasty, tasty body, you mean. Have you ever had a suntan, Josh? I can't, I don't believe
listen. I take a great tan, mate. Right, I take a great tan. There's just not enough sun in Scotland to get one.
Maybe all red, all that's my prediction. No, my plan is to travel as light as possible, and basically because I'm not paying all the bloody flight companies extra money, so we'll see what happens. Right, we're talking about earlier on, there's as many memorable moments as unmemorable moments. So let's get the bad out of the way first. Unmemorable moments, John, first of all. Right, I mean, there's been plenty, surely.
I mean, there's so many can start from the 90s, but I think from the 2000s certainly. I think the most annoying Scotland game for me watching as a fan was when Norway pumped us 4-0 in 2009, and There was a great joke that did around at that round at that times. It was what do you call a woman with two fannies, Mrs. Caldwell, because Gary and Stephen Caldwell were playing at centre back. Gary gets sent off and Stephen was atrocious. I was getting myself irate that game. We went one down with 10 men, and Burley decides to take off Ross McCormick and play Scott Brown as left midfielder and things like that. The team fell apart. It was, and apart from Carew, who was obviously hard to handle, it wasn't a great Norway team at that point. It certainly wasn't a Norway team that we faced in the World Cup in 98. And that just epitomised the George Burley era. He should have been sacked after that game. I don't care if we had two games left. He should have been sacked after that game because that was a disgraceful performance. He probably should have went after Boothgate as well, because allegedly he'd sent Ferguson and McGregor home, and a couple of players went up to him and said, "Right, if you're sending them home, you have to send us home." And then he panicked and called them back when what he should have done was said, "Right, okay, there's the door. Don't let the pit your arse in the way out."
Maybe it's
That's why for
because
me, that's why for
Ferguson.
me, he's the worst Scotland manager of all time. For me, even worse than, I know people like to say Betty Votes, but Betty Votes was building a new team. George Burley headed a team nearly qualified for the Euros, and he totally ruined it. Yeah, don't have time for George Burley.
Maybe Ferguson and McGregor stole his drinks because allegedly, didn't they? I missed a trick there, right? What I should have said, and we can edit this bit out. What met Scotland moments would you put in room 101? Seeing the title of the book. I did miss a trick there. Tom, what about yourself?
Well, there's a few. Obviously, I cover a couple of them in the book. You know, there's the defeat, the 5-0 defeat in Portugal in 93, when the, Richard Gough plays his last game as well. One I don't cover in the books, the 3-0 gubbin by Morocco and the 1998 World Cup. We just didn't see that coming. I don't think we thought we were going to qualify necessarily, but to get a doing that night was, I think, was just such a surprise, you know. And then there's obviously, the 96 defeat to England. You know what I mean? It's always crushing, you know. But yeah, look, John, I do cover some of those. I covered the Boothgate in the book. And I do look at Bertie Vogts as well, and I do try to give him credit for that he capped a lot of young players, and like you say, he was trying to build a team, you know, and didn't really get the credit for it at the time, which I think's a kind of thing, you know, just digressing slightly, you know, Craig Brown maybe didn't get the. You know, in retrospect, he gets more credit for what he did with the Scotland team than he was getting actually at the time. Certainly towards the end of his era in charge, and the same way we see Andy Roxburgh as well. Maybe get a bit of a hard time, you know. And then looking back, he actually done a pretty good job as Scotland manager. But yeah, room 101, I think, could be packed to capacity. John, with moments that Scotland fans want to forget.
Aye, definitely. Josh, you obviously mentioned one or two already, but any others that stand out in particular?
Oh, a couple, mate. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Wales away. Wales at home was a particularly nasty one. What was that? Blaisdell, was that? That was 1-1, wasn't it?
No, at home in the 2013 quarterfinals, no, we lost 2-1. It was a game in the snow.
2-1. Yeah. Aye, so I mean that one. I don't think I've ever been colder than that night in my life. I went to that game wearing a Tartan Army scarf and a Scotland top and my kilt, and we had to walk back from Mount Florida into the town, and it was a fucking blizzard. I don't know. I honestly, to this day, I don't know how I survived that. That was and after losing that game, it was horrible. Probably a more modern one, actually. San Marino away, 2-0 we won. Alan McLeish, his last game. That the atmosphere at that game was poisonous. Like one of the genuinely one of the most horrible atmospheres I've been at a football game ever. There was just a real feeling of, you know, because Alex's appointment, and you know, we all love Alan McLeish as a guy and a football guy, but you know, I think his appointment at that point in time just stank of SFA. You know, it had that SFA stink on it, and yeah, it was just the wrong guy at the wrong time, and it was particularly just after, because that was just after Kazakhstan. And then probably the last one would be to Poland. The kind of protracted way that that happened, of it filtering through the crowd, that Ireland were 1-0 up against the Germans. After watching, well, it was during the same time, wasn't it? But watching Stephen Fletcher and Matt Ritchie score probably two of the best goals I've ever seen as a Scotland fan, and then just the end of that game was devastating. It was really absolutely devastating. And still to this day, I've got an old picture on my phone, when it goes to the studio, about 20 minutes, half an hour after the game, maybe 15, 20 minutes after the game, you're in the studio and it's looking out to the north stand, and there's two bodies still sitting in their seats, and it's me and my mate just sitting with head and hands, absolutely devastated for about 15, 20 minutes after the end of that game. Let's get them in the Scotland 101.
Okay, a couple other moments. Scotland, when they went to Georgia were playing 16-year-old, 17-year-olds, we were wearing that red strip, lost 2-0. That's got to be in there. I don't have much more detail needs to go in there. And obviously, Craig Levein in his 4-0 against Czech Republic. He'd obviously been watching too much of Roma and all these European teams that could do it, but the difference was they had Francesco Totti. We had Jamie Markey. So very different with him, but there's a couple to throw in the mix. I feel like a lot of our favourite memories are probably going to come from quite a recent times, but maybe just touching one or two just now, Josh, start with you. We've probably covered a fair bit of them already in the last season or so, but
Well, in terms of,
favourite memories.
oh, what, Christ, where to start?
Let's go one or two.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Scotland, Spain, but do you know something? I don't think I will ever top Norway away. It is probably the best trip I've ever had, and I spent an absolute fortune on it, but probably the best Scotland trip I've ever had. And to boot as well, I lost my top in Norway and it found its way back to me.
Aye.
Amazing.
That's golden. John.
Well, unsurprisingly, I'm putting Scotland, Spain from last qualifying campaign top of list. There's obviously personal reasons in that because Callum, my oldest son, was a mascot. It was amazing getting him getting out on the pitch, and then to see Scotland comfortably beat. You can argue Spain are we're a sound transition, but they're still Spain. They're still no top nation, and we played them off the park. You saw Kieran Tierney rip Champions League winning right back Carvajal in the left hand side, and McTominay scoring that terrifically taking second goal. So that definitely goes in number one for me. In terms of the other two great Scotland games I've probably been at, I'm going to put when we beat Greece to qualify, to effectively qualify for Euro 96, because Alan McCoy's fairy tale comeback. He'd been out for two out of the Scotland squad for 2.5 years with a broken leg. Comes on 70 minutes, and then in 71 he had scores with his first touch from a John Collins cross, and we just knew we were going to Wembley. Well, I think 28 years later there was a good book coming out. And the last one,
No,
no, see, obviously I didn't do France away, so I'm going to have to do the France home game 1-0. That was just an amazing day when Gary Caldwell scored. I had a feeling we would win that day. I don't know where that came from, given we're up against the number one ranked team at that point. But yeah, that's my three standouts, if you wanted answer.
see, just on that game against France, right? I was looking earlier because we're going to be talking about the Nations League draw, and I was trying to think when Gary Caldwell scored in that game. It seemed like forever we were waiting for that whistle to blow. He actually scored in the 67th minute. That definitely the longest 20-odd minutes I've ever experienced that game then. I mean, back then, I would have been going to games, and the like Josh is like now would have been at the shed since whenever it was opening, and probably I do not remember much about the game. So that explains why I couldn't remember when they scored. But
I remember when that goal happened because my mate decided at that point to go to the toilet, and we'd had a corner just before then, and I don't know what happened, but I think there was almost a feeling in the stadium we were going to score from this one. So later on, I just ripped the pee at my mate because he missed the goal. What a time to go to the bloody loo! He tried to slag me off for missing an Aberdeen goal against Partick Thistle League Cup tie later on the following season, but I was like, not quite the same as missing Gary Caldwell's mate.
Definitely not. The other one that stands out for me again recently, the Scotland Israel game, 1-3-2. I don't think I've experienced a better atmosphere at Hampden. I've unfortunately never got to the England game. Would be it was a 2-2 draw, right? This was an actual win, and especially the amount of times we've played Israel over the time, and it's not even McTominay's winner. It was the second goal for us was just an unbelievable rush through my body that I don't think I've experienced that again before. So that definitely stands out. And yeah, Scotland Netherlands back in the day, which again we'll touch on later on because we could potentially face them in the draw. But when we McFadden scores, I had posh seats at all. It was a good day. It was a good day all round. That was again back in the day where it used to be all day for it and probably all night as well. So I just memorable moments. And share it with friends as well. Tom, what about yourself?
Well, I watched that Scotland Holland game in a pub in Ormskirk, which is just between Preston and Liverpool. And actually, the whole pub were supporting Scotland. It was interesting watching a Scotland game in England, and finding that everybody was supporting Scotland. Obviously, no, the kind of thing that would happen in reverse, But obviously, typical Scotland. That just built the hope up for the devastation of a few days later in the second leg, but yeah, I would just I agree with John. The Spain game, I mean, the Spain game was tremendous. It wasn't any kind of snatch and grab or anything like that. It was actually, the stronger team all the way through, all the way through the pitch as well, So I think that was the game where you really did think, no, we are back. We are actually capable of doing things again, like Josh was saying there. You've got that belief that we can beat anybody, and not just that, can I beat anybody on our day? You're right, Josh. It's like, we can actually compete against teams again.
I was just going to say, do you know another one that doesn't get talked because this kind of fell into the kind of the Spain and the Israels and the great nights at Hampden and all that. Was it 1-1 or 2-2 away in Austria, John? Or was it 1-0? 1-0
We
away
went
in
1-0,
Austria.
yeah, but Landon Dyke scored, yeah. We drew
Yeah,
them in a friendly 2-each after the
I
following game.
that. Aye, that's the one the scooter problems at. No, the 1-0 away victory, wasn't it? That see for me, right, and folk will think, what? See for me, that was the moment I thought, holy fuck, we are a team now, because we went away to a tough that any team in the Scott part the past 20 years since 2000s, that was a game that we were never going to get 3 points from, but you just knew it was one of those games that was like, oh no, that we're going to get a draw or lose over in Austria away. And we went out there and fucking ground out this result. And I always remember it was the one right at full time where John McGinn had his arse over the ball. And the ref blew the whistle and he just picks up the ball and boots it into the crowd. That was an amazing, amazing result. Sorry, John,
That
cut you
was,
off, mate.
yeah, no, that was, I think that was a statement of intent from Scotland that, for too long we were going to places and just accepting a draw will do. Now, that mentality I absolutely detest has cost us tournaments. Dublin in 2015 always rankles in my mind for that because we played for a draw that day and it came back to bite us. But yeah, that Austria game gave us a different mentality. It was a game, I can't believe I forgot this in my top three. Scotland Ukraine in 2007, because up until probably the Spain game, that was the last time where we beat a really tough opponent, quarterfinals to the previous World Cup, and had a bit of a swagger about us. We were outstanding that game. It was a sunny day in October. We scored twice within the first 10 minutes. We'd just beaten France the month before. with some good club results in Europe with Celtic, Rangers, and Aberdeen at that point. And it was just like the perfect day. And you know, also won 3-1, a comfortable 3-1 win. We believed that we were almost there in terms of Austria and Switzerland, but of course, Georgia put pay to that, didn't it?
So you're doing an errand here. I only asked for one or two, but we'll accept it on this occasion. It's all right.
Take
We'll
out
accept the point.
the France
Good
one for that one.
heavens. What's that?
Take out the France one for that one.
Right, okay, we'll move on to the Nations League draw. It takes place on Thursday. So as I say, we are in A, Group A, as such. Right. What we ought to know
Okay.
first of all is what teams do we want? Okay. So what one has Spain, Croatia, Italy, Netherlands. Josh, who are you wanting?
Spain, Italy, Croatia, Netherlands, pot one.
Aye.
Italia.
Right, you want Italy.
Yes.
John, who would you like?
I don't want Spain because we just played them. I'm going between Croatia and Netherlands. I'm going to say Croatia because I do think that they are starting to they will start to decline by this point because I don't think Modric will carry on after this tournament, surely.
No, I won't. I think this is a swan song. Tom, who do
I would like Italy as well. I mean, I really want the big teams all the way through, but for this, I want all three pots. I want us to get the strongest nations possible, I think.
I mean, to be honest, it doesn't really matter who we get. They're all good teams, but I would go with Italy again. I don't think they're very good teams just now. And I think they're the most favourable one. Plus, I wouldn't mind a wee trip to Italy to see Scotland play.
Yeah, I'd love it. I've never had the pleasure of going away to Italy to see Scotland. I'd absolutely love it. You know, maybe Italy, John, just I would love it, man. Particularly, this is one for Blaisdell. Italy, do they play all their games in Rome, or are they like Spain? Do they float about?
They float about. I know that in 2005 we played them in Milan, and in 2007 we played them in Bari. Yeah, I think they try and rotate it as much as they can, to be fair.
I've not got a full on quiz right for us tonight, but there's maybe a few wee questions right throughout this. So, Scotland have played Croatia six times. How many defeats has there been for Scotland in those six games? Josh.
One.
Aye, what gave that away?
I don't know.
Aye, unfortunately, it was one that counted the most in terms of obviously the Euros, right? Okay. You remember the Scotland Italy game in 2007, and you remember Christian Panucci scoring the winner. Who scored Italy's opener?
I know this one, but I'll let somebody else go.
Tom, do you remember?
I should because it's in my book. I remember.
Luca Toni.
Yep, right, well
I
done.
knew.
Okay, right, that'll do us then for group for that part. But aye. Basically, obviously, we know Scotland last played Spain recently. Croatia, 2020 Euros. Italy last time was a friendly in 2016, but prior to that was the aforementioned game that we just had the quiz question. Netherlands were due to play in March, obviously, in a friendly. We played them a couple of friendlies recently, but prior to that, it would have been 2003.
2009,
In terms of qualifying.
2009
Oh,
World Cup
2009,
for
aye,
2010.
2009.
Yeah, they beat us 3-0
Aye.
in Amsterdam. That was my first away game, and beat us 1-0 at Hampden when we had to win to qualify or get the playoff, and we failed.
Aye, right. Right, okay, so the next pot, we have Denmark, we have Portugal, we've got Belgium, and we've got Hungary. Tom, I'll ask you first, who do you fancy out that lot?
Portugal.
Portugal. I'm going to say as well, I would like Portugal because I've never seen Ronaldo. So from a selfish point of view, I'd quite like to see Ronaldo before he retires. Josh?
Give me the teams again, sorry.
Okay. We've got Denmark, we've got Portugal, we've got Belgium, and we've got Hungary.
Denmark, I would say. I've done the other three away.
Right, okay.
This is how I pick my this is how I pick my groups, mate. It's always based on right, what's the best away day out of that?
Aye, but see if you're looking at it, like, I mean, do you really want Denmark in terms of how much the Euros is going to cost?
Oh, hi.
Denmark ain't going to be a cheap trip.
That's it. No, that is a
You
great.
better tell the missus she's not getting a kitchen till 2030.
That is a great shout, mate. Right, but I've done Hungary, and Hungary wasn't that cheap. I could tell it was going to be like, cheapest chips, man. It wasn't that much better than anywhere else.
It's 2024, nowhere's cheap.
Exactly, mate.
Aye. John, who do you fancy out that?
For a great away day, we haven't played Portugal in a competitive game since, well, that 5-0 93, and I don't think we've played them away since 2002. I think it was on the better votes, so I think Portugal would be great for an away day. But in terms of quality opponent, I think Denmark are. I think their little golden period of the last few years is going to come to an end, and that would be the better option there.
You would take Denmark, right? Okay. So Denmark obviously played in the last set of World Cup qualifiers. We won 2-0 at home, lost 2-0 away. Portugal, as you say, World Cup 94, lost 5-0 away. Belgium, Euro 2020 qualifiers, lost 3-0 away, 4-0 at home. And then Hungary, we've never played them competitively. Obviously, that will change at the Euros. The last time we played them, we won 1-0 in Hungary. Who scored?
I know.
Anyone know? You know?
I know. I know.
You know?
Matt
Were you there?
Phillips. Yes, I was at the game, aye.
You're at the game play, okay.
Actually, by the way, here's a tidbit for you.
Okay.
I was at that away game, and myself and two or three other boys, right, created the Scott McTominay "I Love You Till My Heart Breaks" song at that away game, and I've got the fucking video on my phone to prove it.
Right, okay. Pop it right on that then.
Trademark.
Trademark, right, okay. And then, I mean, this pot, a couple of teams in there that you kind of think, what are they doing in there? Maybe, well, maybe one actually in terms of recent form, right? You've got Switzerland, you've got Germany, you've got Poland, and you've got France. So, John, out of that.
Well, for potential beatable opponent, you've got to say Poland, because they were horrendous in the last World Cup qualifying, last year qualifying group. They might not even make the Euros, even though it's not the hardest section that they're in for that. I think Lewandowski will probably be gone by then in terms of playing wise, obviously. In
Retire
terms of a
from
trip
national
with,
football.
hmm?
Think he'll retire from international
As I
football?
already just thought, well, that probably explains a lot from then.
Oh no, I'm saying, do you think he will?
Yeah, I
Okay.
think so. And in terms of trip, we haven't played Switzerland for a while competitively, so I'm going to say them for that. Obviously, we're going to Germany this summer, which will be class, and France away is always a good trip, but you don't really want the French, let's be honest. If you want to, because we don't want to get, haven't gotten ourselves into League A, we don't want to get relegated to League B.
I mean, can you imagine a group with Denmark and Switzerland in terms of finances? Bloody hell. Beans and toast diet for a while, right? Who was so Poland or Switzerland? Which one?
Poland.
Right, okay. Tom, who would you like out of that
I'll
four?
go for Germany. I'll go for Germany.
Germany.
So it's big teams all the way.
You want the group of death?
And big teams all the way. Well, that's how that's how we're going to improve. Playing all
Well,
the
exactly.
big playing all the big teams.
We're in there and we'll find some big teams at
It will get better.
Euros. So, Josh, who would you like out that for?
Right. Poland, Switzerland, Germany.
Switzerland, Germany, Poland, France.
Oh, that is a tough one, isn't it? See, I'd say Switzerland, John, but you're right in terms of the dough.
Mind you, I've got a
Could
mate that stays in Switzerland, so maybe ask him if he can sort us out.
maybe get some digs with him. Because the thing is, you're not getting a beer for under 15 quid there or something, aren't you?
Mind you,
Maybe
if
get
they
some
charge us
maybe could
accommodation.
Could maybe hit the slopes actually while we're over there. No, I'll go. I've played Poland tons of times, man, but Krakow or Warsaw is always a great away day. Go Poland.
Poland. I mean, I would go for Poland as well in terms of, I think they're the worst team out of the lot. And if Lewandowski was still to be playing, oh no, I've seen him at Hampden. Did I? No, he never got off, did he? Did he go off the bench in that friendly? I remember.
Well, he scored twice against us in 2015 as well. So I've unfortunately seen him score twice against us.
I was off it then. I was in a mood with Scotland then. So I think
that was when you. That's funny. You stopped following Scotland mysteriously when we were crap.
yeah, I'd had enough. I'd had enough at that point. There was more to it.
Josh, I
But
was
yes.
getting slagged off on this podcast for going to Scotland games, and I was getting the whole "I wouldn't watch Scotland if they were in my backyard."
Oh,
I wouldn't want my
I, oh,
captain to
I,
say.
oh, I, John.
It's all, it's all, it's all out
You
there.
know it,
Don't
John.
worry.
You
I've
know it,
said it.
mate.
I've said it.
You
But
know
I come on and take my medicine as always. Right? Don't
it. No,
worry.
you do. Hey, you do that. You do that, John. Which
I
is
always take my medicine.
more than can be said for certain Aberdeen fans on this podcast.
Aye, so and Celtic fans maybe as well, right? So Switzerland last played in a friendly in 2006, and prior to that, competitively Euro 96. Germany, we played numerous times. Last time was Euro 2016 qualifying, we lost 2-1 there and 2-3 at home. Do you remember? We scored an own goal from Germany in that game.
Matt Sinnels.
Aye. Poland, there was that 1-1 friendly, which should have been the Ukraine game. And then, yeah, Euro 2016 qualifying 2-2, both games. Couple of Desmonds. And France, we played them numerous times. Couple of friendlies more recently, 2023. But competitively, that Euro 2008 qualifying group. Where Caldwell scored at Hampden and James McFadden scored in Paris.
So they're still going to find a way to get us playing Israel. We haven't played them in 3 years.
I mean, my thinking straight away is that we're going to get Hungary and we're going to get Germany or Switzerland. And then,
Spain.
aye. But to be fair, we're in there, right? And we're playing these good teams. And again, it shows a sign of improvement. And maybe gives us a chance to improve even further. Because there is a lot of teams in there when you're they're in transition. We're no in transition. We are trajectory. They're like
Yeah,
improving. I feel there's a
I
lot
think
of teams in there, like even in pot I mean that pot one looks to me seems crazy to say, but I don't think any teams are anything to be frightened of.
I think the thing about this team is that it's been talked about plenty is that all the starters have got so many caps each now. And I don't think it really serves as I don't really think it gives as much to be beating your Israels and your I don't know your San Marinos and certainly your San Marinos and all that. But I mean I'm talking about your kind of mid-level teams. Your Israels and your Romania and your well not so much Hungary. They're really good now. But those type of teams now. I think we need to be aiming at right. How can we make the next step to being top competitors against the top nations in Europe? And look. I'm the eternal optimist, but realistically, we're never going to win, the Euros or win the World Cup. But I would like to go into a Euros or a World Cup, facing a tough group, and for those teams to be looking at us and saying, that's a tough Scotland, that's a tough game. Could have done me a better draw than that. And I think personally, I think that there's an element of that now. I think teams are looking at us and thinking, right, that's not the easiest game in the world. We'll need to be on it. But I would like to get to a space where teams are thinking that this is really not going to be an easy game against us.
I would imagine it's
Well,
already like that when you look at recent results that we've had against some of the bigger teams.
yeah. No, I mean, I'm kind of contradicting myself here, but. I think there is an element of that right now, but I mean, I'd like teams. I'd like to draw a German. Well, I mean, look, we've got Germany. I'd like the Germans this summer to go into that game the same way they would view going into a Portugal or a Netherlands, for example. To think, right, well, we're not the best country in the world, France or whoever. But this is 50-50.
Aye. I mean, we've touched on it a wee bit when the job is made, but they'll be shitting themselves. The fact that they are struggling massively, they've not played a competitive match for so long, and they've got the opening game. Everyone, we're thinking, there's a chance of a shock.
And as we know, this nation's just going to the Nations League. I mean, the importance of doing well in this Nations League is massive because obviously it got us to Euro 2020 doing well in Nations League C. We've also got promoted, and our season's increased. And if we do well in this session, if we're finishing the top two, we'll probably be a pot one come the World Cup qualifying draw, and that's got to be the next big game. Having got to 2 Euros, and I know the aim is obviously to get the last 16 when we get to Euros, but after that, we haven't been at a World Cup since 1998. It's time we put that to bed. And with this squad of players at the age that they are and the experience that they're getting, that's got to be the next big game for me. Do you agree with that, Tom?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right, John.
I mean, we've got to consider that we've got to get from Mexico City the opening game and then New Jersey in the final. So that's what we're looking at for winning World Cup 26.
Tell you something, by the way, JB. You think my drive from Madrid to Seville was bad? Wait till I make a fuck up with the trains in Mexico to Canada.
No, I can just see it now. You and El Pedro from the cartel meeting up, that's where it's going to end up troublesome. So forget anything about trains. You'll be lucky to make a train. Right,
Josh's
we.
top is going to be lost in Niagara Falls.
Right. Is there anything else we want to go over before we do this wee bit at the end in terms of the draft? No, right, okay. Well, what I'm thinking is we might work it Tom versus John and Josh, okay? As opposed to doing three, I think it will just be easier for time wise and constraint. Josh and John, the two of yous, because you don't want to give players away that maybe Tom could pick. Now, Tom is a guest. The way the draft works is you can pick any player, obviously, but you've got to end up with a yellow team that resembles a formation, okay? So, Tom, for example, if you pick Robert McCall, which I'm just giving that example because it's mainly going to be from our eras, right? The other team can't, okay? So you can pick any position, doesn't matter. Just put a team together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, have we got a list to choose from?
Just, well, when did you start supporting Scotland?
Me? Well, my
Aye.
first game is 83.
83, right, okay. So you. Right, we'll take it from 83 onwards. Now, I know Jordan and Josh, that'd be a bit more tricky for you because you maybe know as many players from that era, right? But try and do it as best you can so it kind of matches up, okay? So, Tom, first pick, who's your number one? Who's your number one in the draft?
Well, I'll go right from the back then. I'll go Jim Leighton.
Right, okay. Doesn't need to be by position. You can pick a striker if you want. You can pick a defender, John and Josh, but
So are
I
we
think
to
just
pick
sent
from the
the
80s?
message.
Are we to pick from the 80s? Because this is Tom's
83
era.
till now. You can pick 83
89.
till now, so.
Right, I've got a proposition, John. Right, we've got two. I say we've got two wild cards each. Right, where we can't contradict each other. Right,
Okay.
okay. Right, the rest we'll negotiate.
Okay.
And I'm going to play one of my wild cards straight away.
Off, right, okay. Barry Ferguson.
Oof.
Interesting.
This is where John will come back in and say Willie Miller or something.
Mean, I'm astonished that they two are first in the draft when you consider all the Scotland players from 83 onwards, right? Tom, who are you picking next?
I'll go for Dalglish.
Right, Josh, I think we should agree on this one. We'll just go with our other striker just now.
Go ahead.
I think we should pick James McFadden. We've got to pick McFadden on this.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, okay. think in the last 40 years he's up there with the top strikers.
Without a
The
doubt.
amount of important goals he scored.
Yep,
Why?
fine, fine. Tom, who are you going as your number three pick?
I will go for Andy Robertson.
Okay. Well, I think this is quite good fun. This is quite a new thing for a podcast. I think it works all right. So, John and Josh, who are you going for your
Oh,
first
right,
team
we've
or first
got
overall?
where's Faddy's Faddy's playing as a striker, is he?
Yeah, so we've got Faddy up
Aye.
front and we've got
Faddy up, fair
Barry
game in the
Kirk in
middle.
midfield. What formation are we going? Are we going old fashioned 4-4-2 or should we go for the Steve Clark, Craig Brown 3-5-2-5-3-2?
You're not going for the 2-2-6 like Scotland played in opening international. Come on.
2-2-6, aye. Aye, 2-2-6, yep. This is like I don't know, aye, what do you think? 4-4-2?
Aye, go 4-4-2.
Aye. Right. Will we go with another striker? Try to get one right now.
Okay.
No, I'm thinking. Right, shoot me down here. He's not my wild card, but I'm thinking Ali McCoist.
I was going to say the same one, so I'm in complete agreement.
Cool.
Now, one thing I'll give you is both a wee tip here, right? Sometimes it's advantageous to pick a player where there's a shortage of players in that same position, right?
Oh.
Because, for example, say an example, right? Someone could pick Frank Hart, Paul Devlin, right? For example,
You guys
right?
are a different kind of Scotland team.
A le
That might.
legend, aye.
But
Legend.
then someone could pick David Cooper, for example, right? I'm only giving an example, right? It could be. Try and think strategically about it as well. So, Tom,
Okay, so
who are you picking?
what you're saying is, John, that when it comes to yours, we shouldn't pick David Cooper, we should pick Matt Ritchie.
I'm keeping a track of all these, Josh, to try and keep
I
us
know,
right.
I know. Yep.
So, Tom, who are you going for next?
I'm going to go for John Robertson of Nottingham Forest.
What a
All right,
shout that is.
legend, eh?
But that's a good one because then you think about Scotland wingers from 83 onwards. Just an example.
Right, Josh, I'm going to just play my wild card here.
Go ahead.
And it's I think we've got to I think we've got to have Willie Milan there. I know you and
Willie
I
Miller.
didn't see I know you and I didn't see him at his best. Even I didn't see him at his best. The only time I saw Willie Miller in the flesh was Aberdeen game against Queen's Park, which is his last game. But we've seen enough clips of him to put him in, and that would be your captain. So I think
Listen,
we can shoot Tom a wee bit as well.
I'm absolutely fine with that, John, as long as he's not got a microphone.
I'll have a whistle instead. Tom, who are you going for next?
So, gonna go for a wee bit of culture in midfield with Paul McStay.
Right, okay. John and Josh, or JJ, whatever we want to call you.
GK, what do you think?
For me, it's
Well,
between
right.
two, and
So
they
this is
both
thinking
begin.
strategically, right? Just rewind. Remember, Tom's already
Okay.
picked a keeper. So you
Yeah,
don't
no,
need
sorry.
a
Oh,
pick.
right, so we're
You
fine.
don't.
All right, okay,
So
we're
you don't need.
keeping. All
You
right. Yeah.
actually. So
Yeah.
think about that as well, like what the other
Okay,
person picked,
yeah.
right?
Well,
Go on. He helps.
there's two that come straight to mind for me, Josh. I'm happy for you to pick it. One of them, one's Andy Gorham and one's Craig Gordon.
Right, so even though I just said strategically, you don't need to pick a keeper just now. You're going for it anyway. Right, okay.
Aye, we'll just
It's
get
we're a
locked
team here,
in.
we're a
Yeah.
partnership here, John. We've
I
done our
think
work.
it's so hard to say. I think both had. I think because Craig Gordon missed so much of what should have been, I mean, Craig Gordon should have been the most capped Scotland player ever. I'm probably siding with Andy Gorham, but then I think, right, was he as good for Scotland as he was for Rangers?
Year 96 it was. I think that's where he has an advantage, though.
Well,
He played in two
that's
tournaments.
yeah, that's your well, that's your special. Euro 96 is your specialty. Let's go, Andy Gorham.
Right. Okay. Tom.
I'm gonna go current again, John McGinn.
All right, okay,
Fuck
nice.
off,
So, have you been taking notes on who each other's picked?
Yeah, I've got them all written down.
Yep.
What are you going for next?
Right. JP, I think we've got, so we've got left back, right back, centre back, centre mid, and we're two wingers. I think we need to probably go for a winger. They'll start getting it up. Would you think, MD shouting out
Familiar
at
to.
you?
I'm wondering if James McFadden should actually be moved to the wing to accommodate another striker, because McFadden could
Yeah.
play in the wing and we're
Oh, aye.
struggling,
Left
so.
wing, no problem. No problem.
Yeah.
What do you think then? You got another striker in mind? Lee Miller.
I didn't get enough caps, unfortunately.
mean, remember, you've got 1983 onwards. So
Yeah,
yeah,
83
no, I know.
onwards, aye.
And we're no picking Paul Devon. Or Gary Teal.
What about Alan Hutton? Alan Hutton, right back?
I'll go Hutton. I mean, I do think Hickey will become better than him eventually,
So they
but
are.
Hutton for that Italy game, yeah. I'm
Love
happy with
this
Hutton.
eye. We'll pack a striker. Alan Hutton's fine. Okay. So there we go. Right, Alan Hutton. Tom, who are you going for next?
I'm going to go in defence. I'm going to go for Colin Henry.
Colin Hendry. Good shout. Right. So just for the benefit of everybody listening so far, Tom so far has Jim Leighton, Colin Hendry, Andy Robertson, John Robertson, Paul McStay, John McGinn, Kenny Dalglish. John and Josh have Andy Gorham, Alan Hutton, Willie Miller, Barry Ferguson, Ali McCoist, James McFadden. Who is your next pick?
I think we should pick our next central midfielder here, Josh, and
Yeah,
we've got
I'm gonna get. Yeah,
lots of
there's
options
so many,
here.
so
Yeah.
many. What do you
The
think?
one I was thinking of to compliment Barry Ferguson for keeping the ball and all the rest of it, you need a midfield terrier in there, somebody that can really be an ankle biter. I'm thinking Stuart McCallum there.
Okay, yeah, I like your thinking, Stuart McCall. I was there was one that was shouting out at me there, but I'm definitely happy to go Stuart McCall. A highly underrated Scotland player, I think.
Right, okay. So Tom, by my reckoning, you've got a right back, a centre back, a winger, and a striker left. If you're
Right.
going to go for two, I don't know what if that is where you're going. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to go for a utility player. A utility player and a big party boy, Callum Patterson.
You're having us on.
No. I'm putting
That's
Callum
random.
Patterson in there.
Striker
Are you saying that
or
for a bet?
and are you pals or something like that? Where's
Still,
Callum?
he can play at the back, he can play up front.
Nobody.
That's it. Shite in every position. Yeah, man.
Jesus. I mean, I thought they two were bad. Oh, I will pick a striker. I Alan Hutton and oh, you don't need to pick a goalkeeper now, just now because Tom's already picked us, and then you pick a keeper. You're going Callum Patterson. What
Goes
position
for
do you put him
Callum
in?
Patterson.
What position?
In the defence.
Right
Right.
back.
Well, centre defence.
Centre back.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to see him play centre back. I've seen him play right back,
centre
striker,
back, Colin Hendry and
midfield.
Callum Patterson. I don't think Hendry would have been
What
happy with that.
tattoo with that is?
A wild shout. Right, okay. John and Josh, who, I mean, if you can recover from that,
Yeah, who
right,
right? Who we put?
mean, I mentioned Jimmy Mackay earlier. Like, is he a contender?
Who we putting up top with Ali? Because
Yeah.
right, I mean, I don't think actually. I mean, do we want to change formation? Because I don't think Ali's going to have any bother with the centre backs.
I know. I mean, we could technically put, Ryan Christie in there
I
and
would
play
do
him
that
off
too.
the front.
Somebody should go to John and Josh. If Callum Patterson's playing centre back, I would get sits up
No.
front straight away.
I know.
But
Here
I
we
mean,
go.
Ryan Christie hasn't let us down in terms of, that, I mean, there's that goal against Serbia. He can play off the front and,
Yeah, I can play multiple positions. I'm happy with that.
If you're going with Christie as a wide type
Number
player.
10. Or we could
Yeah,
have
not.
or give Christie in the left wing and put Faddy up front. They can interchange.
Right,
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
Aye,
Aye.
we were at Total Football. Right, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Total football. That's what we play.
Right, I mean, that, Tom, what's your next pick?
Next play, I'm going up front and I'm going to be Mo Johnson.
Mo, good pick. I'm surprised he wasn't picked earlier, to be fair, Mo Johnson. Good choice, like it. Now, Gleeson Johnson is a strike pairing. Oh.
Josh, I think we should get a left back out of the way. This is screaming
Yeah,
out.
yeah.
We've got to pick him since Robertson's been picked by Tom.
Yeah.
Callum Davidson in there, is that right?
No, Stephen Craney.
Kieran Tierney.
Yes.
Tierney in at left back, right? Okay. Tom.
Right, so who am I looking for now? What have I got left?
By the looks of it, you've got I would say a centre back and a winger left, even though you said Callum Patterson at centre
Yeah.
back. Maybe at full back, you'd be better off.
All right, I'm looking for a centre back.
Centre back and a winger.
I'm gonna go with Richard Gough.
I thought you'd say
Oh,
that.
there we go. There we go. He's just
I
saved
was gonna be
himself.
my next
I
wild
mean,
card.
the fact he's not been picked yet is quite extraordinary as well.
Hard.
Right. So, but you've got a centre back and a midfield type player or striker,
Yeah,
depending on what you're doing.
a right winger or could be another four, could go 4-2-4, who knows?
We could.
We could be
Yeah.
Ferguson and McCall, to be fair.
We're no short of centre back options, Josh.
No, we're not. It's just, it's. I mean, it's hard to think because you're looking at,
Stephen
I
Caldwell
mean,
or Barry Caldwell.
well, I mean, if we're going, oh, fucking hell, man, I can't believe it. I didn't think of Graeme Souness as one of my wild cards. If we're going back to the 80s, I mean, you've got Alan Hansen and you've got even Alec McLeish. You've got. So I think of Liverpool players in the 80s.
I like your Souness shout, and I think Souness in that midfield would work. Would make it work. We could
Right.
even go 4-3-3 with that.
Oh, right, I'm happy with that. We'll go 4-3-3.
Right.
Souness, that is what I'll tell you something, by the way, and this has just happened organically. That is one staunch midfield.
It's quite a staunch team. Fair, you get one, two,
I know.
three,
Who
four, five,
the
six players that have played for Rangers. Aye.
I
The
know, I
problem will
know, I
be
know.
that
Actually, this
half of them
is.
won't turn up. Half of them
I don't
won't
know who
turn
I've
up
got this
on
out
their
of.
board.
I have no idea who I've got this out of, John, by the way. This is like. This
I'm not better,
is.
Josh.
No, this is like an Orange Lodge select, isn't it?
I draw the line at Ryan Jack.
Well, who is your final pick?
Final pick, I'm going for a winger. I'll go for somebody a bit more recent, and I'll go for a Akechi
Oh, lovely. A cult hero.
Legend. Cult hero.
I like it. I like
What's
it.
Anya up to these days?
Think he's.
I think the last I read he was playing
He must.
non-league. I don't know if he's still playing non-league or
He'll
if he's
be long
retired.
retired, won't he? Maybe. He'll be well done with professional football. He must be about 40 now. You'd think, see a player like him, you would think he would get a game in the speakers like Dane Knights around Scotland and that, you know what I mean?
Maybe get him
Right,
along to
so.
the we'll get him along to the same event that Leon Jackson comes to. Imagine
I might be
we go
Leon
mad no.
Jackson in the kitchen, aren't you?
Imagine we go Anya for an interview, by the way.
Right, good. Right, okay. So you've got a centre back left. Who is
Alan
that?
McLeish. McLeish and Miller, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aye, it's got
Put
to
me,
be.
mate. Put me, mate.
Right, okay. So we could put out to a vote once people have listened to the podcast and see what the better team is, but we'll
Love
round up
that.
the two teams. Tom has Jim Leighton, Callum Patterson, Colin Hendry, Richard Clough, Andy Robertson, John Robertson, Paul McStay, John McGinn, Rikesh Anya, Mo Johnson, Kenny Dalglish, John and Josh have Andy Gorham, Alan Hutton, Willie Miller, Alec McLeish, Kieran Tierney, Barry Ferguson, Stuart McCall, Graeme Souness, Ryan Christie, Ali McCoist, James McFadden. I cannot believe that John Collins never got picked by either team.
Oh, cultured.
I know. It would have added balance to our team as well, but hey.
But they are two very good teams. So we will do this again as we get closer to the tournament with other guests and see what we can come up with. is even when you're looking at the teams yourself, you'll see players that are maybe missing that could have been in there as well. And you'll see players in there that maybe could have been replaced. So, right, before we wrap up, Tom, let everybody know where they can purchase the book.
You can get the books from the usual places, Amazon. You can get it from UK bookshop. You can go to the publisher Pitch's website, and it gives you a list of different places you can buy it, and you can go into Waterstones as well, and you can hopefully find it easily on the shelves there.
Am I right in saying there might be some signed copies in somebody else's stores?
I think actually the same copies have gone in the Waterstones
Gone.
in Glasgow, but I shall pop in again and ask, slightly embarrassed, and asking, can I sign books, please? But yeah.
Silverburn is one of the guys from the podcast. He worked in Silverburn. Quite open about that, and he'd be delighted to have you in there.
Right, okay, I'll make a point of doing a wee tour of the Waterstones in Glasgow soon, and get some signed copies out.
And Tom, congratulations again. I mean, to do a second book in a couple of years, well done to you, mate. Really enjoying
Thanks.
this one so far. I look forward to finishing
Thanks, Sean. I look forward to reading yours as well. When's yours out? The
it.
next
I'm not
one.
supposed to be plugging mine just now, but yeah, it's coming out on the 27th of May, but there will be an event around about the 30th, but we'll keep you posted.
Grant.
We'll get an exclusive.
Not just yet. I'm keeping it close to my chest just
Okay,
now.
right. And Josh and me are not writing a book yet, but if we were writing a book, it would be about the West of Scotland, your juniors, wouldn't it?
I could write my first book will be about 2023 to 2024. Irvine Meadow, are they the worst team in Europe?
Or you could write a book about being a Rangers fan but being a member of the Green Party. Folk can't understand that.
I could write it. Do you know, actually, I could honestly write a book. I've just realised this is the first podcast SFF show I've done since the proprietor of Darvel FC decided that he was going to pull out the club. Maybe I will write a book, Darvel FC 2019 to 2024. I'll think of a title and I'll get back to you.
What?
Right, okay. And we're not going to bother talking about Aberdeen and Neil Warnock. That'll be saved for another time. Don't know what yet. Do I know what yet? What's happening next week? I like to sometimes let folk know. Aye, nothing planned as such yet. Next week might just be a kind of general type show reaction to the Nations League draw, and maybe we'll talk about the Aberdeen appointment then. You never know. Hibs might be out of a manager by then as well, because they don't keep managers for long. So, John and Josh, always a pleasure. Tom, nice to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on, guys. I've enjoyed it.
And as is tradition, happy football.
Happy football.
Happy football.